Michael Avery with Classic Business on Classic 1027.
It's just gone 28-7 here on Classic 1027, and we're continuing to talk broadband on the panel, sponsored by DFA, premier provider of robust wholesale fibre connectivity to ISPs and telecoms operators. You can visit them at dfafrica.co.za for more information. Just a quick recap. On Monday night, we zoomed out, and we also went under the sea to get a big picture of the undersea cable infrastructure, the big pipes that are connecting us to the rest of the world, how they're financed, and it's clear from the five cables that we currently have and the other five under construction that our pipes are keeping up with demand to ensure that we don't have a bottleneck constraining our broadband growth potential into the future. Last night we discussed what that actually means for the technologies that rely on fast, reliable, low latency broadband, and we heard how some of these technologies, cloud, AI, machine learning, are driving things like the fight against rhino poaching, of all things, proving how truly all-pervasive and disruptive this technology is. It's all about broadband on the panel, sponsored by DFA.
This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027.
Well, tonight we're talking fibre rollout in South Africa, and I'm sure you've had your pavement ripped up by now and seen the massive land grab currently underway to get fibre to the home and business. And my experience has certainly been a good one. We had, I must admit, Vumatel come into my suburb and rip up some of the grass. They didn't rip up too much of the paving, and they did leave everything in pretty good nick. But what this is really about is an absolute revolution. They're calling it a land grab, as we see players coming into the market to try and connect that last mile of fibre to the home. So let's invite tonight's panellists. We've welcomed back Vino Govinda, the Acting Chief Strategy Officer at Dark Fibre Africa. Vino, good to see you again.
Thank you, Michael.
And next to you is Juanita Clark, the CEO and co-founder of the FTTX Council of South Africa. Juanita, the FTTX Council, good evening. What is that again?
Good evening, Michael. Thanks for inviting me. We're a lobby group focusing on stakeholders within the fibre optic industry. So we're just a platform that brings everybody together to talk about all things fibre.
And your background in the telecom space?
I've been here for a really, really long time. But focusing on networking and,
Doesn't show. Anyway, Sean Barkhuizen is our third guest, the CEO of South Africa Digital Villages. And it's a position you've held for the last 11 years, Sean. So this is a space you know quite well. What is SA Digital Villages all about?
Michael, so we started in 2007 with one of the first fiber to the home deployments in South Africa. So we've been in this business for a long time, and we essentially deploying last mile fiber. So we're kind of one of those players. We started off as one of the pioneers in the industry.
Well, 2007 was a long time before the 2014 Parkhurst fiber story hit the news headlines. It's been going on for a long time, this.
It has. I think we were under the radar for quite a long time, sort of building, the services around fiber and fiber to the home. And then, of course, Telkom helped us, or Altec helped us with that, court case that was involving Telkom at the time, and sort of the market deregulated. And, at that stage, we were sort of already in the business and participating in the sort of FTTH under the radar, and then obviously just things opened up from there for us, and we've grown in leaps and bounds since then with all the land grab that's going on in the country at the moment.
Just for listeners who might not be au fait with some of the lingo, FTTH, fibre to the home, FTTB, fibre to the business, FTTX is the
fibre to anywhere.
Oh, fibre to anywhere. That's what it is. The simple fact is that we're in this era of the fourth industrial revolution. We can stream things. We are now streaming HD content to the home. We're watching Netflix. We're doing all of these things, and that's really driving this demand of fiber, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yes. But fiber is actually a little bit more than that. It's not. A lot of people think that it's just a great internet experience. But there's a lot of consumers that now want to watch what they want, when they want. So obviously, we've got choice in terms of that. But it's also really the backbone of mobile technologies and the future of mobile technologies. For instance, 5G cannot exist without it. It's also instrumental in IoT applications as well as AI and all the wonderful things you discussed last night.
Now, that said, Vina, are all fiber solutions the same? Are we, because it's a very particular skill that, that one has, and I've heard from friends and family that depending on who's installed fiber in your neighborhood, sometimes the experience isn't as good as another experience with a fiber operator. What are the key things to consider when installing fiber?
I think from an operator perspective, one of the key things to consider is that, you know, you have the right information. I mean, you're digging up areas, you're trenching, right? And we rely a lot on waylay information, waylay from council information, and the accuracy of that information, you know, because that determines whether you're going to, largely whether you're going to disrupt the service or not. So waylay information, very important. I think the other important thing, and I think Juanita will touch on later, is around, you know, how do we as an industry make that information available, not to just one player, but to a number of players that are working concurrently on similar projects, so as to minimize impact in terms of
those
negative impact.
Broken water pipes or the like, and I'm sure we actually had to experience quite a few of those water outages when we had our fiber installed in Glen Vista. Now, there's obviously a growing demand for fiber in South Africa. I don't know who's got the figures at their disposal, but what are the numbers? How much of the country is actually covered, and how much still needs to be covered in terms of this land grab?
I can tell you that from a DFA perspective, in the metro areas, the key metro areas, we've rolled out over 10,000 kilometers of fiber, and we'll grow to another, over 1,000 more in the next financial year. But, I mean, from a metro area, we feel the network's really present. It's just about densifying the network now, meaning building out more accesses to reach more people. And while we do that, we make that core backbone network available for other providers to extend, service providers to extend their networks as well. So they don't need to rebuild. I think that's the beauty of open access.
That was going to be a big question of mine. Yeah, I've often looked at trenched pavements that are then retrenched, and I've wondered, isn't there a better way to do this? A way that you lay one pipe and you have that open access and allow everyone else access to that one pipe rather than going and building pipes concurrently, Sean?
Yeah, I think that's part of the regulatory challenge. I think, you know, some municipalities are doing that well and others are not, you know, and obviously that ends up being, you know, that you're trenching three or four times in the pavement. But I think it's a really capital-intensive business. So, you know, from our perspective, you know, we need to build quickly and, you know, make sure all the ISPs out there are participating on our open access network. So you discourage that duplication of infrastructure. You know, that's when it really becomes frustrating for the consumer and the end user, when you keep disrupting, you know, his pavement and the relative services within the suburb. So I think we just, you know, you have to be clever, and, you know, I think there's regulatory issues relating to you know, how you look at shared infrastructure, and maybe Juanita will have some input on that. She's driving some of those initiatives.
On the regulatory front, obviously we've got a debate around the WOAN, and that's quite separate to what we're talking about here. What are the local government regulations, and what role is the local authority playing in regulating all of this to ensure that we don't trench ourselves to death in the suburbs?
So you've got more progressive local authorities that institute policies that will avoid duplication of infrastructure, but it's more at a national level that, you know, that things are taking place. So the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services is in the process of it was in the ECA Amendment Act as well. We're focusing on the rapid deployment policy. That is the processes and procedures for obtaining wayleaves. It's the rights and obligations of all the parties that are affected by, the deployment of infrastructure. But that's been coming since 2005. But I must say that in the last year, the DTPS have set up, and on the 17th of May, the minister said in Parliament, he announced the RDNCC, which is a Rapid Deployment National Coordination Centre, which will then take all these applications into a central area and then just handle it in a more efficient manner to avoid excessive duplication.
That sounds like a practical, logical way of handling things, perhaps a little bit late in the game, but encouraging nonetheless, Vina.
Yes, definitely. I mean, as I mentioned, you know, sharing that information and expediting that information and applications quickly really supports accelerated delivery and rollout of network. Just to add to that, I mean, over and above WayLeave information, skills is important as well. It's a very labor-intensive type of business. And, you know, having, you know, skilled, not just skilled in terms of digging up, but, you know, safety, health, those skills are important, and, you know, we really need to support those skill impartation in the industry to prevent those types of issues.
Sean, it was a recurring message from this year's FTTH Europe event in Valencia, this widening gap in skills amongst installers, because many of those have previously worked with the old copper cables, and the current workforce ages over in Europe mean that there are fewer youngsters coming up through the ranks. I couldn't find anything with regards to the South African market. Is it a similar issue that we're facing in South Africa with regards to the skills?
Yeah, I think the skills, you know, with the rapid land grab going on, the skills shortage is prominent in the country, and I think there's a number of initiatives we have within the group, you know, from a training perspective to train, you know, youngsters coming into the industry and train them in skilling them up, you know, to create employment for our required deployment. So I think it is definitely there. The gap is maybe not. I think it's widening because of just the volume and of the deployment that we're seeing at the moment. But we're trying to do as much as we can, and there's various initiatives in place to try and sort of, you know, get the skills levels improved.
Can you just elaborate on one or two of those initiatives?
Sure. There's a company within the group called Ukukwala, which is sort of a training academy within the group, and, you know, there's one or two others that we're working with that you know, bring youngsters through. There's some job creation from that we're working on with matriculants that are leaving matric, you know, also to kind of bring them into a training scheme, you know, into the fiber industry. So those are one or two of the initiatives that we have got going on at the moment.
For how long do we expect that kind of demand for skills in this fiber infrastructure rollout to remain in place for? What's sort of the capex duration here versus and also the intensity on capex versus opex?
Well, I think we're in the early stages. You know, we're far from saturation within the industry. I think one of your questions earlier was how many. I think we have less than 500,000 homes passed would be the stat, you know, that's on the table at the moment.
Wow.
And the total market is 3.5 million plus. You know, so there's still a long way to go, and, you know, obviously all the main urban areas are being rolled out at the moment, but you've got to kind of start looking at the outlying areas from there. They also need fiber, and there's demand, big demand from consumers in those areas as well. So I'd see another 5 years at least of rollout, you know, at the pace that we're going currently. You know, it's still going to be crazy for another 3 years at least, and maybe then it'll start plateauing a little bit and slowing down a little bit, and then we'll push into those rural areas as well.
And financing those rural areas, because the model's always been you go into a particular area and you gauge demand to see whether or not homes will actually sign up to the fiber once it passes the home and you reach a threshold and you can press the green button on a project. How do you gauge the viability of a project maybe in a more peri-urban or even slightly more rural setting?
Well, I think we found from experience that the lower earning income groups are actually the demand for fiber is there because they're turning over their dollars two or three times. They're watching carefully what they're spending, as opposed to just being happy with mobile data. You know, so we're finding quite a good conversion rate in sort of LSM 6 to 7 bracket, and we are pushing quite heavily into looking at innovative ways to deploy in these sort of high density environments. You know, when you get the higher density, then the cost per endpoint is lower. And as long as the take up is there, then it, you know, maintains the business case and the model for us to deploy. And so there's a number of these projects that we're rolling in that sort of LSM bracket, and that, you know, we'll see in the next few months how successful that is.
Costs are obviously a big issue in the telecom space in South Africa, with data must fall. You know, whether or not the debate has been well enough articulated as to why data expires and what some of the inherent business models are, I'm not quite sure. But we have seen costs come down at least. Vino, what do you expect to see on the cost front for fibre? I was actually quite surprised. An uncapped 20 meg line cost you less than a DStv premium subscription nowadays. So I think people are really looking at that and saying, well, you know, what do I get if I just bolt on a Netflix and I get everything else over and above that? Mm-hmm. So to me, it's already competitive at a certain income bracket. When is it going to be competitive to the real mass market and below?
So, you know, you're going to look at that model for broadband, what you're talking about. And as you know, as you discussed on Monday, more undersea capacity coming on, meaning that internet breakout, international breakout, prices come down, price per meg for internet breakout comes down, which will reduce the largely contribute to reducing the price per meg for broadband. From an infrastructure perspective, you know, as the networks grow out, and as you get more critical mass, you get more economies of scale, which in turn will drive down prices as well. So we expect prices to go down and more bandwidth to be made available. Fiber plays an important role there as well, because even in the case where in rural areas where fiber may not be the last mile, but fiber enables you to backhaul a good service that can be delivered on a wireless medium. So it still builds critical mass, paving the way for fiber deployment in future.
And I think we'll touch on that tomorrow night when we have a look at some of the solutions that are being brought to bear in the public sector when it comes to connecting rural communities with the digital access in their libraries and schools with content and PDF-type textbooks as well. Juanita, looking at this, it's a really exciting space to be playing at the moment. Very competitive, though, which is a good thing. I mean, competition brings down prices. Are you happy from a regulatory perspective that we have the regulatory touch that's going to have that balance, balancing competition and inclusion and access?
Absolutely. I think, the market is still young. I think we'll see a significant amount of consolidation still over the next couple of years. But I think, the fiber industry has proven that it can deploy a good service at a reasonable price. Uptake was slow. We'd like to see uptake higher. But we are seeing, uptake increase exponentially as consumers are aware of it and become more aware of the services and what they can do with fiber. But I think that the market is highly competitive. I don't think, considering the cost associated with deploying infrastructure, that operators are doing bad. I think, it's really something to be commended.
Looking at this from a perspective of ongoing maintenance, Sean, the one issue we always had with ADSL and some of the old copper cables was almost every time it rained, the service would go down. What are the inherent characteristics of fiber when it comes to long-term ongoing maintenance? Is it as susceptible to those kinds of interruptions?
No, so fiber is a piece of glass, essentially. So, it doesn't get affected by lightning or electrical interference and so on. It's not susceptible to theft either. So fiber generally is a lot more stable, and you don't see the downtime. The uptime is much better. There's no issues with regards to storms and rains and electrical interference. So the fiber is much more reliable, as a service, and that's what the consumer wants. You don't want a service that's up and down every time there's a storm or a cable theft. Mm-hmm. So it's just much more reliable. With the online economy and the demand for content, people are generally wanting to be connected 100%. It's like a business. You want 99.9% uptime, but a consumer is demanding that as well, because they're relying more and more on their connectivity, and they're consuming content, and they're working from home. So it's really becoming a critical tool, and we're finding those business people going home, and they're kind of migrating their work into their homes as well. So those, they want to be connected to the office.
Yeah.
So everything is becoming critical for that connectivity to be stable. And, fiber is the only way to go from that perspective.
Now
it's really stable.
People working remotely and working on their desktops via the cloud and able to access all of their shared documents, and you actually do need almost 100% uptime. What really excites me is what waves of innovation this might unleash. And I was thinking about this the other day. Now that you've got the possibility of all homes, let's say in a particular income bracket, homes with pools, having access to internet and all with blanket coverage, you could quite easily conceive of a little device with sensors dropped into the pool that they can communicate with your home network and let you know how much pH or whatever pool chemicals you need. For any entrepreneurs out there, I've just shared a very good idea with you. But, I mean, that's the kind of innovation, that we can start to expect.
So now that you mentioned that use case, one of the DFA companies is Squidnet, Patiz was there yesterday, and they've actually got a solution already on that, on the pool pump, on the pool solution, where you have a sensor in the water that measures alkalinity, acidity, temperature, conditioning, and it pushes that back to a platform and on the IoT network. So instead of you seeing your pool green when it gets green, before it even gets there and it exhibits the symptoms of getting there, they're informed that you can do proactively treat that water.
Well, I mean, there's a bucket to be made on that. I think you're solving one of the biggest home ownership pain points, and that's keeping your pool
Absolutely.
Blue. But it's just one use case, one example of what I really reckon will be a real wave of innovation. Let's talk about some of the challenges that we've experienced up to this point. Juanita, what have been some of the learnings, some of the big challenges that we could improve upon going forward?
I think for operators, and I'm speaking on their behalf, I think the single biggest challenge that they've had has been dealing with local authorities. 281 or however many there are today, and each one of them have got its own set of rules. So I think it's the process from determining where you want to go to the point where you can actually break ground and start deploying that, because there's no one set of rules that everybody can follow. Some of the other challenges are criminal activities that's rife within the industry, which is a grave concern. That's an entire conversation by itself. It's one that we're having with government. We are making them aware of some of the problems, we're hoping that we will come to a solution together.
So bribery and corruption at local government level?
Not necessarily at local government level, but they are what we call so-called, they call themselves business forums, and they will go to sites, they will stop work at a site until such time as they have been paid monies, or they will confiscate your infrastructure or damage it or else. And this is just a pure, pure criminal element.
It really is a crisis at local government level. We had, as William Keze, the Minister of Cooperative Governance, just relay a couple of weeks ago how serious the decay at local government level is. We don't really get to touch and feel much of it here in the metros, but a lot of those local authorities in the rest of the country are staggering a little bit. Vino, what have been some of the challenges from DFA's perspective?
I think some of the challenges are, you know, we want to roll out quickly, speedily, and efficiently, and delays come. Delays, we mentioned waylives, but also delays in terms of permissions from property owners, because you know, you need that permission to enter a building, and there's been guidance provided from a legislative perspective, but just in enforcing that, you got to be sensitive towards enforcing that. But I guess that's one of the major challenges, and I guess as an industry we need to come to an agreement in terms of, you know, the cost of that to society in terms of holding back that speed of deployment.
So.
Yeah, I think from our side, obviously, number one, finding enough capital to deploy as quickly as possible. You know, that's obviously, it's a capital-intensive business. But besides the wayleave delays and so on, that's already been mentioned, you know, it's finding the right skills for that rapid deployment, you know, building the resources to be able to deploy a quality network fairly quickly. You know, there's so many people out there building fiber, and as you've already alluded to, the fact that, you know, some people have a great experience and others have a really bad experience. You know, it's trying to maintain a good name in the industry and building quality networks, carrier grade networks, and there's a lot of guys that maybe, you know, cut corners, you know, and they don't trench as deep as they should be, and so on and so forth. So those are some of the challenges we've found, you know. But
is there any authority that actually keeps a tab on the quality of the installation?
Well, some of the wayleave conditions dictate that you should be in some of the councils. Again, some councils are doing it well and others not, but they dictate to you, you know, what your trench depth should be and how far off the pavement you should be trenching and so on. So there's some guidelines from a wayleave perspective. But in most cases, you know, that's not very well policed. It's kind of left up to the various guys to look after how they actually deploy their own networks, and, you know, some of the quality is lacking in certain areas. So it's sort of self-policed, you know, in most cases. Some of the councils are really good and they watch you carefully, and, you know, they do some quality checking and control, but you know, I wouldn't say that's across the board. You know, there's no consistency.
It's a tangible example when business people talk about certainty. regulatory certainty, but also operating certainty in South Africa. This is the kind of thing that they're talking about. When they go from one municipality to the next, that the rules of the game are the same and they know what they're going to get from one municipality to the next. And it's one area, you know, that we could really improve on.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you could depend on someone else giving you the standard, or you can define the standard. That's great, right? I mean, one of the things we are cognizant of is that the uptime of the network is a key measure for us, and we're sitting at 99.99%, and that's because we build to 600 ml. The depth, that's the standard that we build by. So it's important that you, you know, as a business, you know, you determine your standards determine the quality that you can deliver. And that's the principle of our business.
Just as a parting shot, the technology of the fiber itself, those glass tubes, that is developing as well. It's not like we can expect to have one standard fiber optic cable forever.
Well, it'll always be glass, you know, so I think, you know, there's nothing else that can actually come near, you know, the speeds that fiber optics can, or the bandwidth that it can, you know, provide you with. So it's actually termed, globally, it's known as the future-proof technology, mm-hmm. Just because right now as we sit here, we can't even begin to think of how we can use up the bandwidth that's available.
Right.
Yeah, I think the fiber is sort of, you know, the fiber in the ground, that's pretty static, and that's, you know, not, there's a bit of development going on, but where the real development is happening is on the active equipment that you plug into the fiber, you know, and that you will sort of, you know, maintain and upgrade as the technology advances over the years. But the fiber itself is in the ground, that's future-proofed, and, you know, what may change over a period of time is the advancement in technology on the active side.
Thank goodness we won't have to have our pavements trenched anymore. That was Sean Barkhuizen, CEO of SA Digital Villages, who is joined by Juanita Clark, CEO and co-founder of the FTTX Council, and Vito Govender, Acting Chief Strategy Officer at Dark Fiber Africa.
Michael Avery with Classic Business on Classic 102.7.